Masechet Baba Kama, Daf Samech Vav. We saw Machloket yesterday between Rabbi Ilah. He says that if someone steals a calf when it's a little baby, and then it grows up to be a bull, and he slaughters it then, so the thief does not have to pay the four times. Because when it undergoes a physical change, that physical change of going from a baby to an adult, now it, before it was a calf, now it's a bull, that also effectuates a legal change. That the thief now owns the animal. Yes, of course, he still has to pay monetarily back the value of what he stole, but because the animal is now a different animal, he has acquired it, and therefore he slaughtered his own. He does not have to pay the four times for this bull. That's as opposed to Rabbi Hanina. He thinks that although the physical change is not significant, the physical change does not make a legal change, does not change the status of the ownership, the thief does not own it, and therefore the thief slaughtered the owner's animal, the one who we stole it from, and therefore he would have to pay four times. Good. That's the machloket between them. And the last thing that we saw is, well, how does Rabbi Hanina explain this? Right? Shouldn't it in fact change? And we answered that Rabbi Hanina in his Beraita that he quotes is following the opinion of Bet Shammai. Good. And now we're going to introduce the machloket itself between Bet Shammai and Bet Hillel on this subject, and we're going to bring a source for each one. De Tanya, Natan la be'et nana, chitin v'asa'an solet, zetin v'asa'an shemen, anabin v'asa'an yayin. Tane hada asur, v'tane hada mutar. Here we're not talking about a physical change that will effectuate a change in ownership. That was what we were talking about before. But we're going to compare that to also a physical change, but this time it will effectuate a change in status of something prohibited. The prohibition is from a payment that goes to a zona. If someone gives money or an item to a zona, that item cannot be used in the Bet HaMikdash. So in this case, a person gave a zona wheat, just raw wheat, and she went and ground it and made it into fine flour, which can be used for a mincha offering in the Bet HaMikdash. So she changed the status. Or he gave her olives and she pressed it into oil. Or he gave her grapes and she turned it into wine. So that's a significant physical change. Not only looks different, it has a different name even. So what is the status of the new thing? One Baraita says asur, it nevertheless remains prohibited. Even though she changed into something else, doesn't matter. It's still the same ingredients. It's still the same physical molecules that the guy paid her with, and therefore the prohibition remains. A physical change does not make a legal change. But the other Baraita says, now it's permitted, right? Magically, even though this was a payment for a zona, which is, there's a prohibition to use that and donate it to the Beit HaMikdash, but now it's not the same item as it was before. Oh, she got grapes. This is not grapes. This is wine. Now, we have two Baraitot. Who can we identify them? And V'amar Rav Yosef, Tane Gurion me'asporak. So Rav Yosef said that this Gurion of Asporak said in the following Beraita, Bet Shammai Osrin u'Bet Hillel Matirin. The one who prohibits is Bet Shammai, the one who permits is Bet Hillel. Well, so what is the reason? Bet Shammai says it remains prohibited because a physical change does not effectuate a legal change. And just like here he says that, so too he would say, and regarding the transfer of ownership, that also there, the change from a calf to a bull, even though that's a physical change, does not effectuate a legal change, and therefore the thief does not take ownership of it. And when he kills this bull, he's killing the bull of the original owner, and therefore does have to pay. And that's what Rabbi Hanina's Baraita was following, this opinion of Bet Shammai. Great. My Tama de Bet Shammai, what is Rabbi Bet Shammai's source? Dichtiv gam lirabot shinuyehem. He's going to look at the Pasuk regarding the payment given to a prostitute that says, "Lo tavi etnan zona mechir kele bet adonai lohecha lechol neder ki tovat adonai lohecha gam shenehem." We're going to learn from these last two words. Gam is an inclusive word. Shenehem, the hem, especially of the shenehem. The shenehem is referring to these two examples that it brings. Which is etnan zona and mechir kelev, and says shenehem, these two, meaning only these two things are prohibited, but other things would be permitted. So we have an inclusive word and a limiting word that we're going to have to, and we're going to have to deal with both of them. So the gam, the inclusive word, Bet Shammai says, and also the change status. In other words, even if the guy gives grain and now it changes the status into fine flour, doesn't matter, that also, that's the gam, also, that is prohibited. That's how Bet Shammai knows it, because the physical change is not significant. Bet Hillel hem velo shinuyehem. Bet Hillel says no. He's going to include that in the hem or shinehem to be limiting to and say that only these things that I mentioned are prohibited. But if you change its status, then it's permitted, because a change in status, now it's a new thing altogether, right? Grain, there's no grain here. I only see flour. Bet Shammai, hahu hem, velo veladotehem, hu da'ata. Now, Bet Shammai, what is he going to do with the hem, which is excluding? That's going to exclude its offspring. Let's say someone gives a payment of an animal to a zonah, that animal cannot be sacrificed. But if that animal has offspring, then that offspring can be used. That's what Bet Shammai learns from the word hem. Bet Hillel, tarteh shema'it mina hem velo shinuyehem, hem velo veladotehem. Bet Hillel, where's he going to learn that from? Oh, Bet Hillel is going to use shenehem twice, maybe because it says two here. So that hem can mean, and that will exclude if it undergoes a change, or if the prohibited item has a child, in either of those cases, that is permitted. Bet Hillel haketiv gam, gam leh Bet Hillel kashya. Now, what is Bet Hillel going to do with the gam that's going to include something else? This is a difficulty. We don't have an answer for that right now. Ad kana pelige ela demor sabar shinui kone, omor sabar en shinui kone. Aval inyan shalome kula alma kedemi kara mishalem. Okay, so now back to the machloket that we're talking about this whole time between Rabbi Ilah and Rabbi Chanina, which is parallel to Bet Hillel and Bet Shammai's argument. And so they are going to disagree about whether a physical change in the item it creates an acquisition or not. According to the Bi'ilah, it does. A physical change makes it a new item, and that agrees with Bet Hillel. According to the Bi'chanina, a physical change does not effectuate a legal change, and therefore the thief will not acquire it. And that was the opinion of the Bi'chanina, following Bet Shammai. So that is a disagreement, and the effect of that will be whether you have to pay four and five times. But everybody will agree that you have to pay the principal and you have to pay kefil, right? That doesn't matter because you have to pay kefil because you stole something and then you were caught with it. The four and five is only based on, since it grew up now and now I slaughtered it, so did I slaughter mine or did I slaughter the owners? But everybody would agree that you have to pay kefil. So regarding that payment, both sides agree that when you calculate the kefil, it's going to be based on the amount, the value of it when it was stolen. Because that's what the Braita says, that you have to pay the double or four and five, right? According to the Bichanina, who says you have to pay four and five. However much you have to pay, you're going to calculate it according to the value of the animal when it was stolen. That's what it says in the Braita. And so now that introduces a question. This seems to be a refutation of Rav. That's how we started this whole subject earlier, because Rav says that when the thief pays the principal, The principal goes by the time of the theft, because at the moment that he steals it, now he's already liable to pay that. But the fines, the double or 4 and 5, whichever applies, that was calculated according to the value of the animal at the time that they go to court, because that's when that liability is imposed, when the court decides the case. And so we have a contradiction, because here it says that the kefel is paid according to the time of theft in the Braita, and Rav said it's according to the time of the trial. So how are we going to resolve this? Amarava tilaim kedemeikara damim kishelachshav. Rava says there's no machloket here. They're talking about different cases. When if it was a little lamb and then it got bigger, right? That's a change in the animal itself. That's the same as what we saw earlier. If the thief fattens it up, then the thief can say, well, I fanned it up. I shouldn't have to pay you for the added things, the added fat that I put into it. And so here, too, this is a change in the physical change in it. And therefore, the thief says, listen, I stole a little animal, and therefore I only have to pay a small animal. That's what I stole. And so that would be the baraita, which is talking about a physical change. And the thief is therefore is not responsible for the growing that happened to it afterwards. Whereas the Rav was talking about when there's a market fluctuation, right? The market price went up for it. Well, that's a different story. There, nothing changed. The animal is exactly the same as it was. The thief didn't do anything to the animal. It didn't grow. It didn't get fatter. But now the market value changed. That's where you have to go with the, yes, for the principal, it's what it was worth before. But for the double payment or the 4 and 5, that goes by the current value when at the time of the trial. And so that's similar to the answer we had before when we challenged Rav up above. Okay, good. Amar Rabba, shinui koneh ketiba vetanena. Now we introduce this concept that a physical change, will make a legal change, that whoever does the physical change actually acquires it. And we'll see some more examples over here. What's the source of it? We have a source both in Pesukim and in the oral tradition. Ketiba, here's the pasuk. Ve'shibet ha-gezela asher gazal. Ma tamud lomar asher gazal. Im ke'en she'gazal yachzir. Im lav damim ba'alma ba'e shalomed. Pasuk says that a thief has to return the stolen item that he stole. Why do you need to say that he stole? Right? If you just say return the stolen item, then obviously he stole it. So what does that mean? What's these extra words? And so it's actually talking about two cases. If the item still exists that he stole, then return it as is, right? You can't just say, well, I stole it, I'll pay you for it. If it's still in existence in the same way it is, then you have to return it. But if it's no longer exists, and that would include if he lost it or it's destroyed or significantly changed, and it no longer is the same item that it was before, then he only has to pay the money for it, because even though physically the molecules exist and he has it in his hands, but it's already a different name, a different item, and so you can't say asher gazal, that this is the item he stole. Here's some examples. Tanena, so that's from the pasuk. The baraita, the oral law source, will give examples. Hagozel asim vasan kelim, semar vasan begadim, meshalim kishat hagezela. If I steal raw wood, just 2x4s, and then I build something, I build furniture, a dresser out of it. So now, even though it's the same physical wood that I stole, but I turned it into something new, now you don't just call that pieces of wood, you call that a dresser. Or if I stole wool and I sewed it into a shirt, so now it's called a shirt, it's not called wool, I don't have to return the wool, I have to pay for it. So I pay according to the time of the robbery, and I pay for the value of the raw material. But now, obviously, a shirt is going to be worth a lot more money than the wool, so the thief only has to pay back the wool. And so we see from here that a change in status will make a change in ownership. Iname lo ispik li teno lo ad shesevao patur al ma shinui koneh. Or another example, not from monetary law, but rather from laws of matenot kehuna. Someone who shears his sheep has to give reshit hagez, the first wool, he has to give to the kohen. So yeah, you have to give them the give the kohen the raw some of the raw wool that he sheared. But let's say he didn't get a chance to give it to him yet, and he already dyed it, right? The dyer came and dyed all of it. And so in that case, the owner of the wool no longer has to give it to the kohen, because he has to give to the kohen raw wool. But now this is not raw wool, this is processed wool. Now it's red, now it's blue. So he doesn't have to give it to him. So we see from here that a physical change makes a legal status change, and now the owner can keep it for himself and does not have to give it to a kohen. Interestingly, in this case, the owner does not even have to pay the kohen for it, because he doesn't owe it to one any particular kohen. He can give it to any kohen he can choose. So if kohen A should come to him and say, hey, pay me, you were supposed to give it a shita gez, you never gave it, pay me, the guy could say, well, I don't want to pay you, I'm going to give it to a different kohen. So no particular kohen has standing to bring a suit against him, and therefore no kohen can force him bring him to court and force him to pay, and he does not have to pay the original wool because it already went through a physical change. Rabba just taught that if the thief makes a change in the item, then he acquires it. And now Rabba continues and says there's another way. Yeush amre rabanan dinikne mihu layad inan I deoraita I derabanan. If the owner, the victim from whom the item was stolen, if he despairs of in finding it, right? At the beginning he might say, oh, I'm going to find it. He keeps going to lost and found. But eventually, after some time, however long it is, he despairs, I'm not going to find it, I'm just going to buy a new one. If we can assess that the owner has despaired, then the thief acquires the item. He will still have to pay the monetary amount back, but the item itself he does not have to give back, even if it exists. So Yeush does give ownership to the thief. The rabbis say so. Amir Rabbanan denikne. The question is this law a deoraita law or a derabanan law? Right? Does he acquire it from a Torah level, or is it the rabbis that instituted that he can keep it? If you say it's deoraita, well, we know that's there is a deoraita law that finders keepers after the owner is despairs. But now we're talking about not a thief but a finder, as follows. Mosa aveda lav kevandemi eshmara mina mikame deteteli de kanile hayname kevandemi eshmara kanile alma kane. And we can compare them, and therefore the thief would also be deoraita, just like someone who finds a lost item. If the owner despaired of it before the finder found it, before it got into his hands, then the finder can keep it, right? And that's why, in general, if there's some item that doesn't have a marking, I dropped a $20 bill on the floor, so I despair of it because there's no way I'm going to get it back, and therefore the finder can assume that that's the case. It's not in the special spot, it's not in a particular wallet or anything, so then the finder can simply keep it. And so here too, the thief, if we can assess that it's likely that the owner despaired of it, then the thief can keep the item. He does still have to pay for it. So that would be the argument that it's deoraita, Rabba says. Or dilma ladam yel aveda aveda hu dechi atalide beheterat yel lide aval hay kevan debi isura atalide mid rabanan hu. Or should we distinguish between the two cases? The theft is not the same as the lost item. The lost item, when the finder picks it up and it comes into his hands, he's doing it in a permitted way. In fact, he's doing a mitzvah. He says, oh, someone lost something, let me pick it up and see what it is. And if we see that's just a $20 bill, he picks it up and says, oh, I can keep it. And he did not violate anything by taking it. Whereas this, the thief, he acquired it in a prohibited way. He took it without permission, so now only later the owner despaired. So really we should not say that he can acquire it through in that way. So on the deoraita level, these are different. So therefore, on a Doraita level, the thief should have to return the actual item, even if the owner despairs, because he was ill-gotten gain to begin with. However, the rabbis came and overrode the Torah law as a takana. Why? The rabbi said, let the thief acquire it if the owner despairs, in order to help the penitents. If a thief, you know, he finds a nice watch and he says, oh, I really like this watch, I want to keep it. And now if we tell him, then one day Yom Kippur comes around and says, I really should make teshuvah. I want to make teshuvah. So how to make teshuvah? You're going to have to return the item. Oh, you know what? I really like it. I don't want to return it. I wear it all the time. And then he won't make teshuvah. So the rabbis, look how kind the rabbis were. They want to help even this thief to make teshuvah. And they tell him, listen, as long as the owner despaired, if the owner still is looking for it, then you can't. But if the owner despaired, he already bought a new watch, he moved on, then, you know what? Keep the watch, just pay for it, and at least that way, you'll come and make teshuvah. But according to that, it's a derabanan law, not a deoraita law. Okay, Rabbah asked that question, and he doesn't solve the question. Instead, we have a different view altogether. V'Rav Yosef amar Yeush eno koneh, v'afilu midrabanan. Rav Yosef says that a thief that takes something, and then the owner despairs, the thief does not get it. Not on a Doraita level, and not even on a Drabanan level. If he's caught, he will, or if he makes teshuvah, and the item is still intact, he's going to have to go look for the item, and return the item itself, even though the owner already despaired. And now we're going to have a number of questions between Rav Yosef and Rabbah, back and forth. Itibe Rav Yosef le Rabbah. Rav Yosef, who says Yeush is not koneh, challenges Rabbah, who says it is koneh, from a Mishnah later in the Masechet. Gazal chametz v'avar alav Pesach. Omer lo harei shelcha lefanecha. If I steal your chametz before Pesach, okay, I'm a thief. I have to return it. And now I didn't return it before Pesach. I owned it on Pesach. And then after Pesach is over, I come and say, here, I'm going to return it. Now this is kind of funny, because chametz v'avar alav Pesach, any chametz that was owned by a Jew, it becomes prohibited, even for Hana'a. No one can benefit from it. And so now I'm going to come return your chametz. It's totally useless to you. Yet the Mishnah says that's considered returning. I don't have to give you money for it. I don't have to give you other bread instead of it. Because here's the very molecules that I stole. These are the very mass that I stole. I'm returning to you. And that's a valid form of return. I don't have to pay any other principal. Now, in this case, certainly, once Pesach begins, the owner is going to despair, because he says, well, forget it. I don't even want this the chametz anymore. Even if I would have it, I would have to throw it out right now. And so therefore, I don't even want to own it on Pesach. And so he certainly would have done Yeush. Avis hakadatech Yeush kana. And Rav Yosef es Rabbah, if you think that despairing of the owner gives ownership to the thief, then amay omer lo hare shel chalefanecha deme me'alya ba'eshel umele. Then how can the thief say, here, I'm returning your item to you? Instead, the thief should have to pay the monetary value of the chametz. Because at the moment that the owner, before Pesach, had despair, so then that act itself should transfer ownership to the thief. And now the thief is the one that owns it over Pesach, and now it's worthless, and it no longer belongs to the owner. The owner says, what is this? I had Yeush. I gave up on that thing. You have to give me money. Right, here's a case where the having Yeush and transferring ownership is actually to the detriment of the thief, because the thief would have to pay money. Yet the Mishnah does not say he pays money. The Mishnah says he can give back the item. So what can you see from here? Even though the owner had despaired, nevertheless, the item is kept in ownership of the original owner and does not transfer to the thief. And therefore, the thief can come and say, well, this was yours all along. I never acquired it, so I'm just giving back to you what is yours. That is Rav Yosef's proof that Yeush does not transfer ownership to the thief. However, we have an answer. Amar le ki kamina ana zemichesh vze rose liknot. Hai zemichesh vze eno rose liknot. No, this is different. When I said that despair transfers ownership, that's only when the thief wants to acquire it, right? The thief is like, has this watch, and he's like, oh, I wonder how long would it be till the owner despairs so that I can keep it. But in this case, the thief does not want to own it. The guy is a thief, so he may be a criminal and doesn't care about stealing from others, but he is still a Jew and doesn't want to own chametz on Pesach. And so therefore, even though the original owner it despairs, the thief says, no, I don't want it either. And therefore, he's not going to acquire it if he doesn't want to acquire it. And therefore, even if you say, as Rabbah does, then in general, Ye'ush, on the part of the owner, transfers the item to the thief. That's only if the thief wants to acquire it. But here, he does not want to acquire it, and therefore he does not, and he can just give back the chametz by itself. All right, good. That answers that question. Now, Itibe Abaye le Rabbah. Before, Rav Yosef himself asked Rabbah a challenge. Now, Abaye, who's Rabbah's student, is asking from the same point of view, right? Rabbah, how could you say that that Ye'ush gives acquisition to the thief? After all, look at this baraita that quotes a pasuk in Vayikra. Korbano velo hagazul. If I want to bring a korban, I have to own the animal. I cannot steal someone else's animal and then offer it. Well, we're assuming right now they were talking about that I steal an unconsecrated animal. I make it consecrated, and then I go and offer it, and that's an invalid offering. We ask, Kechi dameh, what is the case? If it's talking about before the owner of the animal despaired, so then, obviously, it doesn't belong to me. I can't offer someone else's animal for myself, and so this would, you don't need a pasuk to teach me that. That would be obvious. So that can't be that can't be the case. Ela lav lahar yeush shema mina yeush lakane. Rather, it must be talking about a case where the owner already despaired of finding his animal. Right. So I stole it. He despaired, and then I make it consecrated and I offer it. And yet it says it's no good. What can we learn from there? That the owner despairing does not give me ownership over it, even though he despaired. And so that is a challenge to Rabbah. Amar le Rava. Now Rava here, if assuming that this is a correct reading, Rava is answering on behalf of his teacher Rabba. So even though it's his student. V'litamich ha'detanya mishkabo velo hagazul. Rava says, wait, according to your reading, right? You're going to read this case in that way. I'll bring you a parallel case of a zav. A zav, anything that he sits on, any bedding that he sits on, becomes tameh. And so the pasuk says mishkavo, only if he owns it, right? If a zav sits on someone else's bed, it does not make that bed tameh, only if it's a bed that he owns. And now this baraita learns furthermore, velohagazul, if he stole a bed and he sits on it, also it will not become tameh. Now what's the case? Hechidameh, ilema de gazal amra ve'abde mishkab, if it means that he stole the raw material, the wool, and he made it into a bed, mikad leman de'amar shinui ma'aseh lakaneh, does anyone think that a physical change in the object does not make it an acquisition? We actually did see that there was, remember Bet Shammai said that, but we're talking about here, the Rabbah and Rav Yosef. All of these Amoraim we're dealing with here agree that a physical change in the item, turning wool into a bed, certainly would effectuate a transaction. So, and therefore it would be his, and it would make it tameh. So it can't be talking about that case. Ela, ma'itach le'memar, digzal mishkab dechabre, hachiname digzal korban dechabre. Rather, this baraita must be talking about where the zav stole a finished bed from his friend, and even though it was finished, but the friend then had Ye'ush, and so it transfers to the thief, and now it is his, enough that when he sits on it, he makes it tameh. So too, since we went through that, and you see that there is a distinction between when whether you steal the raw material or you steal the finished bed, That makes a difference. So to here, you know what? You thought that the case was that when I steal an unconsecrated animal and then I consecrate it, right? Afterwards, doesn't have to be so. Maybe I stole a consecrated animal, and therefore that's why Ye'ush doesn't work here. What the owner is having Ye'ush that he's not going to find it, but it doesn't belong to him. It's already Hekdesh. It belongs to Shamayim, so it's not up to the original owner to give Ye'ush. Even if he gives Ye'ush, it doesn't matter. That's not going to transfer it to me, because I stole an animal that was already consecrated. The parallel here is a bed that was already made. Therefore, it's going to be invalid. I can't consecrate it for me if it's already consecrated for someone else. And if I offer it, for sure, it's not going to effectuate my obligation. If I decided I promised to donate an animal, I cannot offer it for myself. Probably also won't work for the other guy either. And so that's the case that we're talking about. But in fact, there's no proof from here that Ye'ush does not transfer it. Could be that Ye'ush does transfer an item, but here it was not his to transfer because he already made it Hekdesh. Okay, so we solved that question, and now we're going to turn the tables around. Itibe Abaye le Rav Yosef. Now Abaye, who is the one that asked the question before to Rabbah, he's an equal opportunity challenger, and so he asks his other teacher, Rav Yosef, Orot shel Baal Habayit machshava mitame'an v'shel Abedan en machshava mitame'an. This is a Mishnah in Masechet Kelim. The principle of Kelim is that something can become tameh only when it's completed. You finish the manufacturing process. While it's still in raw material, while still being processed, hasn't been finished, even if a dead rat touches it, it won't become tameh. Now, there's some things like leather that they can be finished in different parts, at different steps. It can be used for different things. So you have just a nice flat piece of leather that can be used as is, as a finished product, as a tray or as a covering, as a saddle. But if you want to make a shoe out of it, then you're going to have to process it more. So at what point do we say the process is completed and now it becomes tameh? So that's what the Mishnah teaches. It depends. If it's a homeowner's piece of leather, it's a private person's piece of leather, and he decides, I'm going to use it as is, as a covering. Well, then at that point, it becomes susceptible to tum'ah. But if he decides he's not going to use it yet as is, he's going to make it into a shoe, then it doesn't become tum'ah tameh. So just by thinking that it's finished, that makes it susceptible to tum'ah. However, if it belongs to the tanner, the leather worker in his store, then his thought is not going to make it susceptible to tum'ah. He says, this would be a great covering to sell, right? And he puts it on display for someone to buy. Yeah, but he's not the final user, so it doesn't matter if he thinks that he decides to use it as a covering or to sell it as a covering, because someone's going to come and buy it and says, you know what? I like this color for shoes. I'm going to turn it into shoes. And therefore, his thought doesn't matter, and it still will not be susceptible to tumah. Now, here's the part that we need: shel ganav machshava metame'an, shel gazlan en machshava metame'an. If a burglar in the night who hides his identity steals it and thinks that it's a piece of leather, I'm going to use it as is, it becomes susceptible to tumah as is, and we're assuming that the owner had ye'ush, because we're going to say that in the last line of the Mishnah. That's the key where we're learning this challenge from. So since he had ye'ush, and now the ganav, it transfers to the ganav, and so the ganav says, I'm going to use it as is, so then it's susceptible to tumah. But if it's a gazlan, a robber, and during the day whose identity is known, he doesn't care, he just comes and steals it, then his thought is not going to be is not going to make it susceptible to tumah. What's the difference? When someone comes as a burglar in the middle of the night, the owner doesn't know who it is. So we can assume that the owner is going to despair on ever finding it again. And so since he despairs, that's why it belongs to the ganav. And so the ganav has the power to say, I'm going to use it as is. Whereas if a person comes and grabs it from you out in the open and the owner knows who it is, he's going to try to go to the police and identify and catch the guy and get his item back. And therefore, he does not have despair. That's Tanakama. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Chilufa Devarim, Shel Gazan Machshava Metame'an. ha'an v'shel ganav en machshava metame'an v'fi shelo nitjashu ha'be'alim. Rabbi Shimon says, I think it's the other way around. If it's a gazlan, a robber in the middle of the day, comes and just grabs it out of your hand, then the owner says, you know, the head of the Gambino family came and took it from you, you're not getting it back, right? That's it. You have despair. And therefore, he, the Gambino guy, he says, I like this piece of leather. I'm going to use it as is. And that will make it that susceptible to tuma. Whereas the guy who comes in the middle of the night, obviously, he's scared of being caught. He's scared of people. Well, that guy, the owner says, maybe I can catch him. Maybe there were witnesses that saw him walking by at that time. And so he doesn't have despair. And therefore, the ganav, his thought is not going to matter and to make it susceptible to tumah because, and here it says explicitly, because the owners did not have ye'ush. So from this line, this line is explaining not only to Bishimon, but is also explaining to Nakama. They just think that the owners don't have ye'ush in the opposite case. What do we see from this Mishnah? Ushma mina ye'ush kana. That it's the despair on the part of the owner. That's what transfers the item to the robber or the thief, such that if the robber or the thief says, I'm going to use it as is, then it can become susceptible to tuma because he's the final user, I guess, unless he's going to resell it, in which case it would be more like the tanner. Okay, so therefore we can see that Ye'ush does acquire, and that is a challenge against Rav Yosef. Amar le hacha b'askinan kegon shekise'an. And Rav Yosef can answer and say, no, we're talking about a case where the robber or the thief trimmed the edges. By trimming the edges, he actually did something to it and saying, listen, I'm not going to use it for shoes. You wouldn't trim the edges if you're going to use it more for shoes. He actually made a physical change in the item, and that's what effectuated the transaction. And the ownership shifted. If it was Ye'ush alone, then that would not have given ownership to the thief, only because the thief also did a ma'aseh. He also trimmed it, and that indicated not only his thought, but also the action shows that he's going to use it as is. That, in conjunction with the Ye'ush, can effectuate the acquisition, but Ye'ush by itself cannot. This answer that Rav Yosef apparently gave, however, is rejected. Matkif la Rabba bar Rav Hanan. V'halo isba shanukan v'iseba en siricha kisua. He says that this Mishnah is talking about using a leather as a tabletop, as a kind of a tablecloth, and he's about to prove, and a tabletop doesn't need trimming. I guess the edges just fall off the side. The trimming is just there for ornamental value, but you're not going to see it if you use it as a tablecloth, and therefore it doesn't make sense to say that, oh, here we're talking about a case where the thief also trimmed the edges. He would not trim the edges if he's using it as a tabletop. How do you know he's using it as a tabletop? Because the Mishnah right before the one that we just quoted introduces the case. Ditnan, kol makom she'en chasron melacha machshava metama'ato. Yesh chasron melacha en machshava metama'ato chutz min ha'isba. The Mishnah gives a rule. Any time that there's nothing left to be done in order to finish off an item, it's all the work is completed, then when you have a thought and says, you know what, I'm going to use it as is, that makes it susceptible to tuma. But if there's still steps left in order to manufacture it, it's not done yet, then even if you have a thought that of how you're going to use it, that does not make it susceptible to tuma, except for a tabletop. Because a tabletop it can be used as is, doesn't need to be even uneven edges, doesn't matter, people use it just like that. And therefore, even though there would be more steps if you can use it for something else, there's no more steps to use it as a tabletop. So you see the Mishnah before says where includes a case of a tabletop. And so we have to assume that the next Mishnah is also talking about such a case. And in the case, it has to at least include that case. And in the case of leather being used as a tabletop, there is no trimming to be done. And therefore, that answer that Rav Yosef gave just now is not a good answer. Ela amar Rava, hay milta kashe ba Rava de Rav Yosef, asrin v'tarten shenin. Rava, students, instead says that this matter, Rabba challenged Rav Yosef with it, even though above It was actually Abaye that brought this challenge to begin with, but Abaye is offering this challenge from on the side of Rabba. And even though Rav Yosef actually gave an answer, we rejected it. And so now we see instead that, in fact, the real story is that he was challenged for 22 years. Vela iparka ad yatev Rav Yosef b'resha ufarka shinui Hashem kishinui maase dameh. And Rav Yosef could not figure out an answer for all 22 years until Rav Yosef became the Rosh Yeshiva. Rabba was the Rosh Yeshiva beforehand. When he died, then Rav Yosef became the Rosh Yeshiva, and then he figured out an answer, or at least that's when he said the answer, as follows. Shinui Hashem, a change in name, when you rename something and say, now I'm calling it that, now it's called this, is the same as a change in action. And so even if they didn't have to, trim around the edges, but calling it a tray, when the thief says, I no longer call this a hide, I call this a tray or a tabletop, then it becomes a new item, and that can transfer. So it's not the yeush on part of the owner that makes the acquisition, but rather the yeush in combination, but not the yeush alone, but yeush in combination with the thief giving it a new name and saying, oh, now it's going to be a tabletop. And he explained the comparison. Shinui ma'aseh mai ta'ama, if you actually do a change, a physical change in the item, which we said all of these Amoraim will agree that a change in a physical change will make an acquisition. What's the reason? Hatame kara'isim hashta kelim, because beforehand it was just plywood, and now you made a dresser out of it. So this is a new thing, a new name. Shinui Hashem nameh mekara karule mashka hashta aberazin. So too, a name change. Before, people called it a hide, and now it's called a tabletop. Even though there's no action that's done, right? No, and once you call it, here, look at this nice tabletop, then people are going to start calling it a tabletop. So it actually changes its identity, and that is sufficient to make the acquisition. Vahare merish, hold on. Regarding a beam, we see that that's not true. A beam might stay the same physically, and yet, by a change in name, it does not make an acquisition. Dika shinui Hashem de mekara keshura v'hashta telala. If I steal a beam, I go to Home Depot, I steal a 2x4, and now I build it into my house as a ceiling joist. So there is a change in name, because beforehand it was called a beam, and now it's called a joist or a ceiling beam, part of the ceiling, a ceiling joist. Utanan ala merisha gazol sheben oba birash notel damav v'pnei takanat hashavim. And yet we have a Mishnah Masechet Gitin that the rabbis made a takana regarding a beam that was stolen. I stole a beam from Home Depot. I built it as a ceiling joist into my house, and now I want to make teshubah. Since it is still intact, from the letter of the law, I should have to take apart my house and return the beam. But because the rabbis wanted to encourage thieves to make teshuvah, they said, you know what? If you just have to pay the money. What do we see from here? The only reason I can pay the money and keep the beam is because of this special takana that the rabbis made. Ha lav hachi hadar be'aneh. If not for that special takana, I would in fact have to return the item, even though I didn't change the item. It's not like a plywood that I cut it up and painted it and everything. Here, it's intact the way it was. And so I have to return it, even though the name is no longer called a 2x4, now it's called a ceiling joist. Even though the name changed, nevertheless, that does not make an acquisition. So this is a challenge to what Rav Yosef said after all those 22 years. Amar Rav Yosef, merish shemo alav, detanya, salot habayit elu metaltelin, elu hamaltetin, vehaubim elu hamerishot. Rav Yosef says, no, it's not true. Regarding a beam, it's still called a beam, even after it's built into the ceiling. And we know this from a baraita, expounding on the pasuk in Yechezkel, when Yechezkel is describing the future Bet HaMikdash, and he says, salot habayit, and he says, these are the casings, and the obim, that refers to the midishot. Now these are beams. These are built into the Beit HaMikdash, and still he's calling them midishot, which means beams. That shows that raw beams are called midishot, and ceiling joists are still called midishot. And so in fact there was no name change, and that's why from the letter of the law I would have to rip out the beam and return it to Home Depot, and it's only only because of the rabbinic enactment. So beams are not the same as leather, whereas a piece of hide is called a hide until the thief comes and says, I'm going to use it as a tabletop. From now on, I call it tabletop. That does effectuate a change. Or another answer, Rabbi Zera Amar Shinoi Chozer L'Briyato B'Shinoi Hashem La Have Shinoi. It could be, in fact, that a beam, a 2x4, once put in the ceiling, is now called a joist, and maybe that is a different name. But if you have a name change that can go back to its original state, then that's not considered a name change. And this joist, if I should decide I'm going to remodel and I take it down, and that joist is still there, is still intact, now it's going to be back to being called a beam. Someone sees it on the floor and says, oh, look at that beam. Therefore, that name change is not a permanent one. Whereas a hide, once the thief says, oh, this is a tray, or this is a tabletop. And so then that's it. Then it's always going to be referred to as a tabletop. It won't go back to being a hide. And so if it's a permanent name change, a permanent name change is sufficient to be a change in the identity of the item. And that is what's effectuating the acquisition, and according to Rav Yosef, and not the Yeush. Baruch Adonai Leolam. Amen v'amen.